Welcome to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com, the show dedicated to green initiatives. Now, here's your host, Percy Dyer.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Percival's Place. My name is Percival, and again, this is my place. Today, we have a very interesting guest, special guest. His name is Mr. Terrence Knight from Maryland. Terrence, are you on?
Yes, I am.
How are you today, sir?
Oh, I'm fine, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, my man. I understand that you have your own construction company. Is that correct?
Yes, I have a construction company, and I do a lot of different things.
Okay. Well, here's a real quick question for you. Now I know you help people, with green construction of their home, you know, in terms of putting up solar panels, which we'll get into, insulation, electricity, water, and you're helping people, green their homes. Here's my question to you. I desperately need my house to be, thoroughly examined and to be greened over. And I was wondering, do you do anything for free, sir? Can you come up here and just analyze everything and just make this happen for me in a moment's notice?
Well, free is a relative term. Nothing really is free in life. I'm always willing to talk. I have conversations, and I'm a homeowner, and everybody I talk to, customer or not, I always try to give them the best advice based on my limited access to things. So, hey, we can talk it out.
All right.
And I can give you some ideas outside of what you may have thought of already. Maybe
okay.
We can elaborate. That's the freedom,
right.
Freedom of information.
All right, brother. Well, that's cool, man. That's cool. All right. So listen, right. Let's talk. So what are some of the things that you can do for a homeowner in the sense of improving their home so that they don't they don't have the same bills that they're normally accustomed to, the electric bill,
right.
the oil bill, the gas bill, the water being the way it is. And how does this help them, being more green conscious today? In other words,
right.
let's start off with talking about solar panels and what that does and what the cost of that is and all that kind of stuff. So let's talk about solar panels to begin with. What are solar panels and what is the benefit of having them?
Right. Well, looking at solar, untapped really resource. The Europeans have been much more aggressive about this than we have. It has the ability to create energy from the light of the sun rays, and it's only capturing one particular ray. But that case being is that. There seems to be a little bit less information about how these things transfer. In other words, you can put a solar panel array on your house, and where is it going to go to? Some people use it for a boiler or creating heat for water, and some use it for electricity. And the electricity creators tend to be a bit more expensive, but I think that as time goes by, it's a much more beneficial, universal use of solar panels, I'll say, because it can be used for heating and cooling.
See, I didn't realize that you could use it for heating as well.
Yeah, the systems can be set up for heating, and a lot of times you'll see people who have pools, large swimming pools, and they'll heated with solar panels versus traditional types of ways to heat.
Right. Now, you see, I've seen that, you know, for solar panels for pools, but I didn't know, I guess I just wasn't thinking in terms of it could actually be used for the household as well to heat up an entire, you know, the water for the entire house. I guess I didn't realize that. So can it be combined with the two, electric and for water?
So more than likely people will dedicate a part of their solar system to one, if they're going to do it like both ways, mm-hmm. a certain panel will be for the water heating and the other part of the array may be for electricity.
I got you. So you separate the two. So you can just split it down the middle. Okay. You can split it down the middle and just use it for like, oh, I got you. Okay. That's pretty good. I wasn't aware of that. All right. Yeah. Well, that's something to keep in mind. That's something. Now explain to me the, cause I, you know, we had a big storm here, Hurricane Sandy, right. as you're aware of. And, you know, there was this whole issue of, you know, people couldn't get their, you know, the electricity was just really, really hard to come back into a lot of people's homes here on Long Island.
Right.
And they were talking about this whole thing of off-grid, on-grid, you know, solar panels. And it was really confusing to a lot of people. I think if you could elaborate on this further now, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. The on-grid thing is feeding electricity back into the grid and it lowers the cost, and the off-grid is just separate. Is that it? I mean, I don't really quite understand it.
Okay. So, I'm glad you asked that, because a lot of people, look at this, as on-grid, the perfect situation, and there's some benefit that, yeah, you have the ability to reverse your electrical bill when you're on-grid, but when you have a catastrophe such as Sandy, you are also you have to suffer from the lack of power in those downtimes, so to speak. Off-grid would be a battery array attached to your home, and there's certain risks to that too, because you have to look at, you know, the devastation of Sandy. Some people's homes weren't intact, but if your home is intact and you're off grid, and you have a battery array, it's somewhat no transition. In other words, the house transforms into the battery array, which is being mm-hmm. powered by and stored, you know, the solar panels will charge the batteries during the daylight, and in the evening when the sun goes down, the batteries would continue to power the house.
Right.
And you're off grid. That means you're not connected to the electrical company. You see no transition. Mm-hmm. You don't have a generator out pumping, you know, natural gas. You won't be looking for gas to run a generator, so to speak. So, you know, in more isolated places too, you'll see people do that where they don't have the access to certain utilities. So that's basically the difference between on-grid and off-grid.
If you're off-grid now, Do you still experience the same cost? Like, in other words, are your monthly fees lower even if you're off grid?
If you are off grid, more than likely you are more dependent upon. I think that if your batteries are fully charged,
right,
and your off grid array can then shut down. In other words, it's fully charged. It doesn't need the source from the panels on the roof. It could then go to the on-grid part and start charging, and you can use it that way. But the battery array can be fairly expensive. So that's why people don't look at that.
Right. Okay. So that was my you're kind of going into my next question, which was, you know, how much is it more expensive to get an off-grid system versus an on-grid system?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the off-grid system is more expensive. So you have a line of vehicles now that are coming out, battery cars. And they're basically doing, you know, they have a commercial batteries in them, and they're quite expensive. And that's right. The main expense for those cars are the batteries.
Right.
You know, these companies are working hard to make battery technology improve. You know, we got lithium and NiCad and, you know, your traditional acid batteries. And as
right.
we grow in that technology, the better it's going to be. But
sure.
No super major improvements have been done. You know, I mean, some of these technologies are pushing 100 years old or more.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Improvements
okay.
have been made, but I mean, you know, we're still working at it. And well, I think that solar is a very good potential, but you know, we got to keep working at it.
Right. I mean, it's right there, and you know, and it's still basically untapped. You know, most people don't have it on their house yet, so you know, it's basically still untapped. Okay. Well,
I was going to say one thing though. You know, it's something mm-hmm. that people haven't looked at, and there's a new material where, you know, people are used to looking at these big bulky panels on the house. There are rolled sheets of solar panel now, as thin as construction paper.
Is that right?
And it can be rolled out into, you know, and I think they have like 16-foot lengths, and it can be as efficient as any of those big panels that you used to see on the house. So I'm looking at it forward, move into something like a roof shingle, where somebody may have their roof redone and have a shingle that'll be a solar panel.
I just
see the technology moving that way.
No kidding. That's phenomenal. Wow. That's very impressive. I didn't know that came out. When did that start?
About the past 3 years, a lot of people, I mean, even in the solar industry aren't familiar with these things. But it's out there.
Wow. That's great to know. Okay. All right. So let's begin on an analysis. Let's say you came up here and you saw my house and it didn't have any, you're able to determine that it didn't have, you know, adequate insulation, there's no solar panels, you know, geothermal, water system, electric right. system, you know, all that kind of stuff. Walk me through what you would advise me to do from beginning to end.
Right, and the first thing I'm going to do is, I always look at these things as a homeowner, and I start simple. So what kind of light bulbs do you use?
Right.
As simple as taking the incandescent bulbs out. The CFLs
right.
are fine, but the LEDs are great.
Okay.
LEDs are very expensive, but considering the amount of time that they will continue the light, and they use a nominal fraction of what a incandescent light bulb uses is like is unparalleled. So you have a 60 watt incandescent bulb or a 3, 4, 5 watt LED bulb, which will give out
right.
more light. You know, there's no comparison.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to last for 15 years.
Okay.
So
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's where I start. That's you can see a significant change in how you use electricity in your house.
Right.
But, insulation, you can look at those things. There's different ways to create insulation. And when you're dealing with older houses, You have to be careful because a lot of people don't understand how insulation should be installed. You know, whether you have the spacing, you know, insulation is no good if you mash it together. They need that space, the air to breathe, and water is an enemy to insulation. And a lot of times you'll see where people just don't install it well.
Okay.
So, yeah, I have to be careful with those things. Wrapping the house might even be better versus doing something inside.
I got you.
So that can create a barrier between you and the exterior, and the foam that they use for the wraps tend to be fairly significant, and you make an air gap, which is what you're trying to do to create the insulation.
Well, I tell you what, Terrence, we're gonna take a break, and I got some more questions to ask you about wrapping the house and you know that that air pocket that you were just elaborating on. Okay, man.
All right.
Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have Terrence Knight on the phone. And, Terrence, I want to go back over that question that I had. Now, I have an older house. And, you know, a friend of mine, a few years ago, he introduced me to this this new technique. I guess it's not really new. It was just new to me about being able to insulate inside the house. But you might be recommending that I since I have an older home here, that may not be the applicable thing to do here. You're just talking about wrapping the house from the outside and creating a pocket.
Right. If you have brick and mortar, it can be, you know, the wrap thing is kind of like out of the question. If you have a siding material, wrapping the house would be a more economical situation.
Okay.
If you have brick and mortar on the exterior of the house, then you would be looking at some type of foam ceiling being pumped into the walls.
That's what he was talking about. He was talking about pumping things into the wall, and I didn't quite understand that.
Right. And it can be expensive, and
right,
it depends on the construction of the house. If you have the fire breaks in the wall, a lot of older houses do have fire breaks. You would be pumping both the upper and lower part of the wall, and that foam ceiling can push the wall material outward. So, the guys that do it well, you know, I would say make sure you see some of their work or references, because if they put too much foam in the wall, it'll start pushing the wall material.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the geothermal, for instance. Now, what are some of the benefits of geothermal for those people who don't even know what geothermal is? Can you explain it? And what are some of the benefits of geothermal?
Well, geothermal is by far probably most efficient thing that you could probably do as far as an expense. Let me approach it this way. Geothermal is a heat pump, basically. It looks like an air-conditioned unit, and you don't put it outside, and you put it inside the house. It uses the temperature of the earth. Once you've gotten to a certain point in the earth, the temperature is regulated. And
that's right.
If you are using a open loop system, which is that you dug a well and you've reached a certain point, you extract well water from the ground, from the earth, and you pump it into the house, and it's coming in at 76 degrees roughly. You can use the temperature of that water and it'll go across the fins and cool or heat, whichever you need, and it'll take the hot and or cold water back down into the earth, and it just continues to circulate into that well back and forth through the house. And all you're really doing is you're not paying to heat or cool the water that's coming in and out of it, but you just running a fan that blows across the screen.
Right.
So, in essence, it's a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it is, right.
Right.
I find geothermal to be, I find it to be fascinating. I think, you know, it was just about 5 or 6 years I discovered that, and I couldn't believe it that you're able to actually cool your house and heat your house, basically for free, you know, and I just thought that was a fascinating, you know, a device. And most people still haven't heard about it. And I know that the cost is really the problem with geothermal, isn't it?
The initial cost is the problem with geothermal. So let's put it this way. You could have a $20 to $40 bill for heating in the coldest parts of the winter with a geothermal system.
Yeah, I get it.
But you have to pay $20,000+ for this system.
Yeah.
To get it in the house.
So exactly.
Longevity, it pays for itself, but this is the other benefit to it. So the most air conditioning systems have a 15 year lifespan, I would say.
Okay.
You know, you get to 20, you know, you're really kind of stretching it on the air conditioning system. The geothermal system could do twice that because it is kept in the house in an environment. It has less moving parts. It doesn't, it's not a furnace that's being heated, you know, additional furnace would be. So it's less stress, less stressful.
Just and you know, and it's the same thing here. I had a gentleman come in and he said, well, it's about $10,000 for your second and third floor, and about the same, a little bit more for your first floor and your, you know, and your main, the basement and the main floor, and it wound up to be about 20.
Right.
And I said, wow. He said, yeah, there it is. It's about $20,000, you know, to put it in. And I said, you know, eventually I'm going to do that because, you know, I'm not moving anywhere. But, you know, for those people who, you know, who may move, you know, you wonder if they should. But, you know, it adds value to the house. So, you know, it's still a worthwhile investment.
Well, of course, if it's your estate property and you have no intentions on moving, I say go all the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you would see the benefits over time. And, of course, you know, it's a lot less expensive to replace that system once it's already in place.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
But that's good. All right.
Cause once the well, and the other thing to that is that, you know, when the water table is high and you have a good well, is wonderful.
It's
going to need a certain amount of water to move to make it really efficient. So I think they say it's about 3 gallons a minute to make it efficient.
Uh-huh.
It's more than that. Maybe I'm off on my number, but the more water that's going through that well, the more efficient it's going to be, the better it'll heat and cool.
Okay. All right. Well, I got you. All right. So, let's talk about electricity now.
Okay.
How do you make home more efficient with in terms of electricity?
Well, you know, like I said, my one thing is, you know, the light bulbs are my pet peeve.
right.
You know. you know, you have a lot of leeches, phones and printers and, you know, routers and different things in your house. And I mean, I'm just as bad as anyone with that. I just don't want to unplug myself because, you know, I don't know when somebody's going to fax something and I don't feel like running around the house to plug something up. So. but those are the things that, you know, that steal efficiency from the house.
Sure.
Be careful, you know, watch your meter. That's the other thing, you know. The electrical companies, I'm not going to say they're we have a electrical company that's been in the news quite frequently, and
So I've heard.
Pepco. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how things go on your end, but I would say that you could have your meter evaluated if you think is not accurate. Your appliances, if they are needing to be updated, the new appliances are much more efficient. Washing machines are much more efficient than older things. So if you can replace those things, I'd say, you know, do so. And, you know, even in the kitchen, your appliances, toasters, stuff like that, microwave, all of these things, you know, you can read the efficiency when you purchase them. They all make a difference. The older refrigerator that may be in the house that you, you know, or, you know, the one plugged up in the garage, you just don't, you know, you only put stuff when people come in town or, you know, sodas or drinks in it, you know, those things are, eat up electricity is more efficient when they have more things in them. If you have something on the shelf that could be in the refrigerator, you know, just taking up space, it's better for it to be full than not. That's, you know, once the system's installed correctly, you just have to monitor what's going on.
Okay. The question that I have for you, and we're going to take a break in a minute, but the question that I have for you coming up after the break is simply this. How is the construction business going now? And we're America's Green Portal, and what we are planning to do is help people with employment. So the question that I have is, you know, in let's say a year or two, how will your business be faring out, and will you be needing new employees? So let me hold that. You know, you get a chance to think about that after the break, and we'll be right back with Percival's Place.
Okay.
Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Percival's Place. So, Terrence, how is the construction business going for you right now?
Construction business is going slower than it has. But, you know, I've refocused them. I'm also a property owner and manager. I manage my own properties. So I'll just double my efforts on that. But even in that, I still need help managing the things that I have as far as my properties. I see that, of course, there's a lot of infrastructure in the nation that needs to be done, and all of these things, you know, are going to have to be addressed. And the areas that were hit hard, like New Jersey and, you know, New Orleans, are still in disrepair and what have you. A lot of older cities, too. A lot of work needs to be done. So I still see it.
That's right. That's right. There's business opportunity out there for you. And, you know, when you're doing these things from scratch, we can, you know, you can definitely, you know, get some new people employed. But at the same time, you can use some of these techniques that you're telling me about.
Right. And you know, like anything, the more you stay in a place or a thing, you grow in it.
Sure.
My dad, you know, did these things as, you know, he was a a bus driver, but he did construction on the side. And
okay.
My brother and I picked up the trades from him, you know, really. So
okay.
But you know, the youth that are looking to do things, whether it's, you know, with your program or Peace Corps, whatever the place may be or the thing may be, just stick to part of the industry and grow in it. And it may lead you in a different facet, but you'll still, it's right. always helpful to know about other things. And we've talked about a different array of things, you know, but you'll gain knowledge of all of it once you get into trades.
Exactly. You know, before I forget, tell the people how they could reach you if they wanted to know more about your business and if they wanted you to come out and give them a hand with their home or maybe they have a project going on in a community and they may need your expert advice.
Right. Well, I can be reached by my phone and that's 301-442-6553. And if I don't pick up, I'll answer my message. And my email address is T Knight. That's my first initial and last name. TKnight67@msn.com. Or my get it done today. Webmail site is, we'll leave it at T9 because I'm always on that.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so what part of Maryland are you in now?
I'm right outside of the District of Columbia, okay. Washington, Maryland. We're enjoying our new construction of National Harbor.
Sure.
And there are different facilities going up.
How's that looking?
Actually, it's going along fairly swiftly. Fairly major project that has been in the planning stages for more than 20 years. So.
Is that right? Wow. Okay.
Long overdue and well needed. So.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear it's finally underway then. Goodness. Jesus Christ. I wonder what took them so long. Don't tell me the budget after 20 years.
No, casinos.
Figures.
All goes back to the money.
Oh, man. Listen to that.
Nothing's free.
No matter how much I hope, right? Oh, wow. That's, oh, man.
No, how much how you hope for me.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. So let's talk about water. Is there a some kind of water unit that can help heat homes, proficiently?
Yeah, they're like we were talking about the solar boilers, and this is another interesting thing that I really hadn't gone into, which is another renewable energy, and it actually is a bit of a tax. Normally, you don't have to pay taxes on it. Is wood pellets. They have wood pellet boilers and furnaces that also heat. Normally, you'll see them in your home outlets, whether it be Lowe's or Home Depot or what have you, Menards or whatever, through the different places in the country. But they are wood pellets. They look like animal feed, so to speak, and you drop them in a hopper and they burn. It's a lot drier, and it leaves a very small flue, a lot more efficient. They can heat both air or a wood source or a water boiler as well. They have them for that and take up less space. So I think that
okay.
It's a some things to look at, and I mean, really, this time of the year is the time to be thinking about furnace and heating. I'm versatile, so I'm not afraid to use wood as well, because it is renewable. And it doesn't,
yeah,
not as powerful as the gas.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, because, you know, I would like to put some, eventually I'm going to do it, you know, some good old fashioned wood burning stoves in in some of these rooms that I have here, and actually a pellet stove, maybe on the porch, you know, just to kind of keep my porch, heated up. And, I know that, you know, heat rises, so I'm definitely looking forward to doing that. And when I was looking at some of these stoves, you know, some of these stoves can heat, you know, 1200 feet, square feet and all this kind of stuff, you know, you know, which is amazing. I had no idea, you know, sometimes some of the old things are some of the better things.
I'll put it this way. I have about 2,600 square feet. Well, probably a little bit more, but at any rate, my wood stove will keep my house warm. My furnace will not come on, up until it gets to about a little bit less than zero Fahrenheit.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean the wood stove will heat the house. When I got it cranking pretty good, it'll keep the house warm. And the only reason I turn the furnace fan on just to have the heat circulate with it.
Wow. When it comes on, how long does it take to come on? Is it just for a few minutes when it comes on?
I'll say this. I have a wood burning furnace in the house, and I have a wood burning stove. And my wood burning stove is more efficient with heat but it produces more heat. But it's not as efficient as the pellet stove. So I can fill my pellet stove up, you know, and it'll run for 3 days with the material.
Oh, you're kidding, right? You're kidding. 3 days?
Yeah, it'll run for 3 days. I fill it up. It'll run for basically 3 days almost. And but my wood stove, I feed that, you know, full log, you know, pieces of wood, and of course, it's creating a lot more heat.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that's interesting. So the wood stove will give you more heat, but the pellet stove will last a little longer when you fill it up.
And it produces a lot less waste.
Right.
The bags come in 50 pounds, and it'll burn it down to something that will fit inside of a water bottle. That's
okay.
How much gas you get from the wood pellet.
Gotcha. I'm sold. Get out of here.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the wood pellets are a lot less work. You don't get as dirty. You ain't tracking mud in the house from digging around in the trees and wood.
Right.
You know, you don't have to stack it like, you know, all you have to do is keep the wood pellets dry and that's it.
Okay. I got you. Man, that's,
so if you're a lazy man, you're a lazy man like I am most of the time, the wood pellets are ideal.
even talking to me a few minutes, you have me pegged, don't you?
Hey, no, this, I think, is all of our aspiration. We all aspire to be lazy. It's just that, you know, we have these other people around us.
Ha, 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 ha. Oh, man. All right, brother. Well, listen, we're going to take a break in a few minutes, and we're going to come right on back to Percival's Place.
And now, back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com with Percy Dyer.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Percival's Place. And Terrence, I got to tell you, man, I really enjoy that conversation with those stoves, because that's something I'm actually planning on doing. Now, they're not as expensive as some of the other things that we were talking about.
Right.
Correct?
You're talking about the
wood stoves? Yeah, I mean, just the basic wood stoves and pellet stoves and that kind of stuff. I mean, I know you have to maybe install a chimney, though,
right,
for some of those things.
Yeah, the main thing about wood stoves and pellet stoves, you know, well, you have to check your local codes to be 100% sure, but a Class A piping, you can't lose on a wood stove. That's a pipe that is double insulated or triple insulated and is cool to the touch. You know, that pretty much is the standard, the industry standard. And as far as the pellet stove, they have insulated pipe for that, and it's either 3 or 4 inches, and you know, there's a lot less involved with the pellet stove as far as having it exit the property, and it just needs to be close to an exterior wall, and it'll, you know, it can go straight out. And it's a lot smaller, but, you know, you will see the soot from that if it's next to the exposed wall, so. If you can put it a little bit further out without it, you know, harming the things, you know, your aesthetics outside, that is a little bit more helpful. But be mindful, like in the wintertime, it could, you know, someone touches it, it could be hot.
So, gotcha.
What's that now?
How do you protect you? How do you protect that? I mean, you know, from somebody dealing with that.
Yeah, and on the interior, I take the stack high and then run it up high. So I want to take it out of the house is above where somebody would be able to touch it.
Yeah, that seems to be the best course of action for that, because there's always a child around that will want to experiment. So, okay.
Right. And, you know, that's pretty much what you have in that regard. My pellet stove is about 6 feet. Actually a bit more off the ground. Exiting out of the house. And of course my wood stove, you know, it's on the roof, it's going through the roof, so it's completely going up.
Okay. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, the thing, you know, the pellet stove you can touch for the most part is warmer, but not blazing hot like the wood stove is. So, the wood stove, you know, I can put water on it, you know, which I normally do just for the humidity. I'll put water, a pot or something to circular to keep the moisture in the room, but it is not to be touched when it's in full array.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay. So, what are some of the what are some of the other things that we could do to green a home besides we didn't touch on, you know, doing windows and doors. You know, I have a door back here that a gentleman was telling me, you know, it's so old that I wouldn't call it porous, but the heat is definitely escaping from it. So, you know, let's talk about windows and doors for a moment. And what is better in your opinion, a wood door or a metal door, and that kind of stuff?
Well, I would say a wood door by itself is better than a uninsulated metal door. So an insulated metal door would be better, but a fiberglass door would probably be best.
Okay.
I think that the fiberglass has less shrinking, so that means it'll keep its shape better, and it seals. It reflects heat and cold. So I think the fiberglass door is the best.
Okay. Is that more expensive?
Can be more expensive. You just have to. I mean, yeah, shop around, but yes, it normally is more expensive. But of course, you know, the wood materials can be more expensive, and normally they're for display, you know, more fashion than its total purpose.
Right.
But a steel insulated door.
Okay. What about something?
Should be more efficient.
Okay, so all right. So basically, you're saying get a fiberglass door if you can't afford it, because it just won't expand as much, and you know, and it moves as much, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
That. All right. That makes some sense. What about these windows? Is there a certain grade of window that is good for keeping that air out?
Yeah, like. When the people say a builder's grade or a modeler's grade or something, it's most times is about the price and the price point and how the window's constructed. Most windows are, you know, vinyl, and in an older home you're getting the vinyl inserts and so on and so forth. And I've replaced all my windows with windows from Lowe's or Home Depot.
They're
all vinyl, and they're quite efficient. Of course, you know, I did all of my trimming on the outside to keep those air pockets and cavities from creating themselves and recalked. So a lot of times it's the workmanship outside of the material. So you can make a not-so-expensive window great if you install around it properly. I would say that, you know, the seals for the window, if your window starts to show moisture inside of it, then that window needs to be resealed. And that's mainly the issue with that. And it happens over time as glue inside of it, you know, releases the double pane. So I'm talking about double pane insulated windows, and that's what you're looking for if you're replacing windows. Double pane.
Okay. How about, I have an issue with my basement, you know, being cold sometimes in the winter. Is there anything that you can do for that besides insulation? I mean, is there something else that's going on down there that I don't know anything about?
Well, you know, not seeing it in particular.
Right.
Ask you, what's the moisture content in the room? How is it? Is it damp? You might suggest a dehumidifier, which could make it colder. But that's mainly what I'm looking at, what's going on behind the walls. I'm assuming it's either a block or a concrete wall.
Sure.
Basement. And how is the water running down off of it? Is the ceiling enclosed?
Okay. Okay. There's a few things to look at.
Right. On the outside, you know, where wind comes up against the house, is it exposed block or brick around the lower edges of the house?
There you go. Because that's exactly what mine is. That's precisely what I have. It's exposed. And so so it's definitely colder in the wintertime down there. I mean, not by much or anything, mind you. It doesn't get freezing down there or anything, but it's definitely colder. And I said, well, you know, maybe it's the windows. Maybe I have to put some insulation down there. Maybe I have to put up some natural, you know, borders like bushes and that kind of thing that they were telling me about, you know, whatever. I may have to do some stuff. But I was just wondering.
Right. So, yeah, just like you said, a hedge around those areas where it's a block exposed can make a difference. Right. If the wind is blowing, of course, something that will keep its foliage, that'll slow the wind down,
right,
keep it blowing hard on the house.
Uh-huh.
It could be painting the surfaces to make sure they're painted versus just a flat block wall.
Okay.
Or you know, something that's going to give it a quality to resist those things that blow up against it or the elements.
I got you. All right. Well, Terrence, I appreciate you being on the show, man. You definitely gave a plethora of information out there, and I'm sure our listeners are going to definitely benefit from that kind of education.
Oh, not a problem. I'm sure, you know, it's a lot more information to be had out there. You know, I've shared a lot, and I was thinking about a lot of things. I'm sure I can conjure something else up for free. But
all right, my brother. Well, thanks for being on the show, man, and I want to thank everybody for listening, and this was Percival's Place, and join us next week for another exciting guest. Thank you very much.